Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is my wardrobe malfunction, where I talk to someone very special about their life in clothes, and together we explore all sorts of other things too. This is our 18th Zoom episode and was recorded in August 2020. We love hearing from you, so can you drop us a line to help@mywardmail.com, and we're always after your clothing stories for our pyjama party section, so please keep those coming too. Do subscribe, rate and review, and follow us on the usual socials at mywardmail, and you can find our website at mywardmail.com. Right, on to today's special guest, the phenomenally talented Nicola Benedetti, virtuoso, violinist and founder of the Benedetti Foundation. Do check out the work of the foundation at thebenedettifoundation.org. It's hugely inspiring. And make sure you listen to Nicola's new Elgar album, which is out now too. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors and find out what's inside.
Bit overawed because I am with Nicola Benedetti. My knowledge of classical music is very basic, but having researched you, I mean, it's the passion with which you play is something I never understood before. The passion it takes to play the quality you do.
Well, thank you very much. I talk about it with young people a lot. It's one of those strange things and inhibitions you have to very quickly rid yourself of. If you're going to go into any world of expression and music making, but with what we call classical music, so much of the time we're really delving into cultures and periods of history that are not all that similar to our kind of daily normal walking lives. But of course, it's a practice in deep empathy and trying to understand who those people were, how they expressed themselves. And a lot of the people that whose music we play, the reason we do play it and still give so much time and reverence to it is that sort of we feel like they were saying things that spoke across time and saying things that are a really profound whole human story. And the study of that is definitely the biggest privilege of the thing that I do for a living, is being able to kind of peer inside the minds of people that thought that way and felt that way and were able to, you know, put it in some sort of written code that we can then look at and interpret.
I mean, do you think that music, more than anything, is more than art, even if you're looking at old masters or Renaissance art, music, classical music, is a window into the past more than any other genre, artistic genre?
I think what music does probably better than a lot of other art forms or ways that we tell stories of who we are and who we were, and of course who we want to be, and how they are completely inextricable. I think what music does is what really good music does is present all sorts of different concepts of humanity at one time. So it's the kind of thing where you can, you know, we can all be listening to exactly the same thing, and if you were to put together the reactions and emotions of all those people that are listening to the same notes, but how complex and how different and how diverse and broad our interpretation of that is and our understanding of it is. And also I think that music does that thing of capturing inside you and sort of almost either clarifying or mirroring or bringing to the surface things that we tend to get a bit clogged and confused about, like, do we really feel this towards something or this towards something or this? And I think music for me always takes me into the state of, it doesn't have to be this or. It can be all of these things together. And actually that's okay. You know, that's a thing to embrace and go on a journey of understanding more about that complexity of who we are.
I find it gives me permission to feel the emotions I'm feeling at that time, rather than trying to, you know, block them out. It kind of, if you listen to a piece of music based on your emotions, good or bad, it'll exacerbate them. And if they're bad feelings, it will soothe, ease them, or part, you know, you'll rage and then it'll park them. So I totally hear what you say.
Yeah. But,
so, darling, what have you been doing in lockdown? You've had no concerts and you've got this amazing foundation. You've been doing the online... Is it Zoom that you've been doing it with all the kids and everyone? I mean, it's just the most joyous thing I've ever seen.
Thank you so much. Thank you. No, it was mostly done on Zoom, but we wanted it to be a sort of mix of, you know, more of a specific sign-up participation, like you're really signed up to a three-week process. Or since we did one massive virtual sessions, is what we called it, massive workshop that lasted 3 weeks and culminated in a big concert of everybody coming together, except for we weren't physically together. But and since then we've been doing sort of lots of little mini versions of it, so things that just last a week or last 2 weeks. No, we did it on a mix of platforms between Zoom, YouTube, Facebook, a little bit on Instagram, because we're always with a mindset, you know, if we're doing something that's worthy and something that's good, we want to share it as widely as possible. And one of the most beautiful things to come out of this period is actually you understand that through a screen you can get around a lot of the logistical and often financial barriers that people have to not be able to attend an actual workshop that takes place in London or in Glasgow or wherever it may be. Suddenly you have this window that, provided somebody has an internet connection and a screen somewhere, they can access what you have to give them. And what was so moving and so shocking was the sense of community people felt and how close we felt to one another. And it was, I mean, we had 7,500 official participants, but many more people just sort of joining in. Obviously, YouTube, anybody can just click on the video and watch. And the number of letters we received from, you know, little 10-year-olds, from parents, grandparents, older siblings, you know, whole families, just saying that to have something that brought everybody together during a time, and it wasn't a completely, it was uplifting and it was emotional, but it wasn't completely frivolous either. It was really quite, you had to work at something, exactly, and do it together. It was shocking how human the whole experience was, if that makes sense.
I mean, I can't believe there's ever been anything like it before, where there's been this kind of collective experience and learning on such a large scale. I can't think of anything where that would have happened before.
Well, I haven't seen it. Summer camps and summer schools, and also education programs that do work all year round. They've been so, I would say actually the most creative work that I've seen in terms of dealing with the lockdown has come out of the education community, yeah. The education world. They've been so inventive with how they've repositioned themselves and how they've communicated with young people. But I would say, like for us, it was our whole mission as a foundation has been changed for the better and forevermore by that experience.
I'm sure a lot of people, it's the first time they've ever had the opportunity to get involved in something like this. So maybe post lockdown, when people can get together, they will then go physically. So it's been amazing. So you've got the BBC Proms on the 3rd of September in front of no one. I mean, how's that going to be for you?
I honestly don't know how I feel about it. Like, on the one hand, you know that, I mean, we've had a lot of practice playing for a screen, knowing that there's people on the other end of that screen. So, you know, we'll be playing for a TV and radio audience. You know, a lot of people have been doing, not a lot, but some people have been doing extremely socially distanced audiences. So just having, you know, 40 people in a space that could hold thousands. But also, like, I mean, if you look at France, for example, they've been putting on full-on concerts for like a month now. They've had concert halls literally filled with people. In Vienna, in Prague, in so many cities around the world, they've kind of worked out a way to do that. And so we're behind. We're just behind and constantly flip-flopping. And I understand that there is, you know, I think it's a mistake to, you know, push for really strict deadlines too harshly, because what happens is then something changes and you have to change.
Yeah, people get this.
Let's not kid ourselves that we've dealt with all of this in the best possible way. You know, we could have done things in a more organized fashion. And also, once you decide something, stick to it. Have some faith in decisions being made. Oh,
I hear you. But it must be, because you must, I mean, do you rely on an audience? How much of your performance is reactive to an audience?
You're definitely aware of the audience and kind of, even like from a physical standpoint, you sort of play out to them and you play into the audience, you know, and to not have that is very strange. But I've been talking to a lot of students about how they've dealt with this sort of change, and I've been encouraging them to look at the screen as something that you actually interact with, as opposed to something that's completely static, that's kind of looking at you, that you feel sort of intimidated by. Like, you've got to use your imagination to the strongest, you know, possible potential and look at that screen as being, like, kind of humanize it as much as possible.
So, as a soloist, you've been in the public eye now, what, since you were 16?
Yeah.
Did that have an impact on your appearance and how you saw yourself?
Oh yeah, totally. Like I think internally and externally, you know, I was, I felt like I was, you know, being looked at through a magnifying glass. I was suddenly hyper aware of everything, and there's a strange combination of you're sort of being celebrated, but I was criticized so much in those first couple of years, you know, bad reviews for concerts and people saying that I wasn't ready and I was way over publicized and all this kind of stuff. So it wasn't like I didn't have very regular, very real reality checks, but it's so imbalanced, you know, you're in a position of like scrutiny past what you really either deserve or can really cope with at that age.
Yeah. But Nikki, do you think that would have happened to the same extent if you'd been like a kind of chubby, spotty little 16-year-old? Or do you think because you have this kind of exotic beauty, I know you're going to disagree with me and you're going to be all humble about it, but it's the truth. Do you think your looks played into that?
Well, first of all, I was a pretty spotty teenager. Skincare, we can talk about another day, but the fact that I took an okay photo, yeah, definitely made a difference. And it's not to say that there are lots of people that are really highly skilled, that excel in their field, that don't have a huge amount of public attention. But the position that I was in, you know, winning BBC Young Musician, but then I was like front page of the Times the next day and lots of, you know, interviews and things like that. I would say that it does happen to young musician winners, but the combination of kind of young and female and looking a certain way, and also the national support that came out of Scotland that sort of propelled that in a certain direction. I think all of those things played into a more intense level of press, and, you know, definitely.
I imagine you hated that side of it, the kind of press attention and that aspect of your job.
I was sort of, it's funny. I look back now and I almost feel like, it's like there's a bit of vacancy to my memory of that. And I think the reason is I had genuinely no emotion or feeling of either achievement or negativity connected to that side of things. If I did a bad concert, I was depressed.
Yeah.
If I did a good one, I felt like I was worth something. And like everything else was sort of insignificant, and I was just sort of being pushed and pulled in this weird wave that went up and down and roundabout. But actually, in terms of what was important to me, like, was I playing well or not? And then relationships to people around me. And that was like, actually determined my happiness or sadness, you know? So everything else is sort of.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I wouldn't say lucky, but fortunate. And it's a testament to your gift that it's so all-consuming. And also, it shows a great deal of maturity for someone of that age when you were young. And you know, you still are young. But to have just been focused on your craft is pretty amazing.
Well, but if you think about my perspective, you know, I had gone to a music school from the age of 10, and then what I was aware of an entire international scene of young musicians that the dedication to playing and to improving and to music and to the violin and to their technique is so all-consuming. I mean, think of gymnasts and young sportsmen and women.
But it's like being a ballet dancer, isn't it? It's the same.
Exactly. So if you think of that, and I've got that whole, yes, I've got kind of the perspective of parents that listened to ABBA and the Bee Gees, and like a family that neither know nor really are all that interested in that kind of like elite sort of musical thing. So I like, and the older I get, the more hugely appreciative of an extremely normal perspective I grew up with. So I had this very like normal perspective, and then I also had this very intense, like hyper disciplined perspective. So I was sort of always riding somewhere in between those two, because I came from, you know, a background that wasn't that at all, and was surrounded a lot by people that weren't that at all, and my sister constantly telling me like, oh, don't be precious and don't be too this and don't be normal, like basically. And then you know, some of my friends were as deeply inside the world of classical music as possible. So I think my dedication to it was a strange mix of those two perspectives.
So when you're performing, I guess it's kind of like when you're playing in front of, you know, with an orchestra, in front of an audience as a soloist, your clothing must be as important as an athlete, you know, what you wear, so that it doesn't inhibit your performance.
Yeah, I it's really important, and it's actually more important for some people than others, because some of us physically are more, you know, some people can just put on anything and it sort of sits on them a certain way that they're not actually that aware of what's on them. But other people, if they're wearing something that doesn't fit right, or they're constantly like, you know, fidgeting about and like trying to. And I'm one of those people. Like, I am so not comfortable in a load of things. And so when you're playing, obviously, your actual position, like your shoulder, for me, I can't have anything on my shoulders. I can't have anything that restricts my arm movement. Your whole kind of breathing area, you just want to be as free as possible. So I would say there's two designers that I've worn most of. I wore Amanda Wakely dresses for like religiously for years, and then more recently I've had a lot of dresses made for me by a British designer, Zain Jamal, and he has actually made, like the last time I played at the Proms I wore one of his dresses, and he's made dresses that are just one shouldered, so they're very secure but at the same time extremely free. And nothing kind of restricting here. And then you've got the whole sort of classical music, like, protocol or, like, expectation of being dressing a certain way. You have some, you know, amazing young people who just say, I'm wearing what I want, and they'll go out in little mini skirts and do exactly what they want
fishnets,
to do. Exactly,
yeah, ripped fishnets.
Yeah, a bit rebellious.
But you have, I mean, you wear wonderful colours, and you've got, because of your Italian heritage, because your father, I understand, is Italian, you have those amazing dark looks. So for you, bright jewelled colours are fantastic. So do you wear those?
I'm going to literally tell you like what I'm wearing right now. I would wear burnt orange, black, goldy colours, beige, white my whole life. If I, like, literally I will go into a shop and I just like gravitate towards those colours. It's like a pool,
yeah.
Which always makes me laugh because they're basically the colours, apart from the black, they're the colours. No, actually the black is also on a violin. It's like every colour that's on a violin are the colours that I would go towards. I do, like, I'll wear red. If I could get a load of colours in burnt orange, dresses in burnt orange, I would. I have red dresses. I have some green dresses. I'm not very good with pastel colours or...
No, they wash you out. Not good. No. And you need that power. If you're backed by an audience, by an orchestra, and you're the soloist, obviously you have to stand out.
Yeah, when I go on stage wearing black, I get severely told off by my dad, who thinks,
good man.
I should never do that. He just is, wear white, wear colour, you won't stand out, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, but I'm, you know, I'm a collegial person. I want to blend in with the orchestra. He's like, no, wear colour.
But he's so right. I want to meet your dad. But and do you love shopping, or is it something you find difficult? Do you walk into a shop and go, there's too much choice?
Like, I'm one extreme or the other. I could go into Westfield Shopping Centre or wherever and get a horrific headache within about half an hour and just feel so drained, so exhausted and stressed. I'll call my mum and my sister. Both of them are extremely good shoppers. And I'll be like, what do I do? I can't make any decisions. Or if the opposite happens, like I'll just be on a good streak, I will try on 20 things and get them all. But I shop not regularly. So when I do, it's like maximum pressure. I have to get everything that I need.
Okay. And you never shop online?
I'm not good at shopping online. I'm terrible at it.
I've got to teach you, because I never go into a shop now, ever. I will come and teach you how to shop online, and I will go through all the good sites. I will come and do that, because you're...
Oh, my God, please. We can document it. You would make me the happiest person on earth.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Consider doing such a thing.
Now, I really hope, Nikki, that you have had a wardrobe malfunction whilst performing. Please tell me you have.
Yes. I've had two major ones. And then many other, like, mini ones.
Yes.
So the first was, I was wearing a dress. This was when I was really quite young. And playing in a church.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
I was wearing a dress that was like a low back, and I had bought a bodysuit to go underneath the dress that was meant, so what I didn't realize was that the bodysuit was like made to go with the dress, beautiful dress, red dress, and what I didn't realize was that there were little hook clips that were meant to have attached onto the straps of the bodysuit, so that the straps of the dress didn't
dress. Very well-made dress. It must have been expensive to have had that feature.
I think, it was like, you know, it was like a buy for me at the time.
Okay.
It was just like, this is my concert dress. And I started playing a piece, which is Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. And you don't stop playing for about 10 minutes. Like, you don't even put your bow down at any point for a single second. So once you start playing, you're in that. Your hands are occupied. I, within about, like, a minute, this side just started, you know, bit by bit. So by the time I got to the first time I could stop, I could take my bow off the string, thank goodness I was actually wearing a bodysuit though. Like, I would have just stopped because I would have been naked on the stage. It was like hat, like literally down like this, and the strap was like down here, and to the point where like all the members of the orchestra were like scrambling around to see what they could do to help. So of course, when I stopped playing, I then rolled it, you know, rolled the strap inside the thing.
Yeah,
and then
they
that
twisted it.
Same thing happened again. So between the first and second movements, the piece does stop, and somebody from the audience had to give me a safety pin. And my sister came to the concert, and she brought three of her friends. They were crying with laughter, like, in the concert, and they were like about three or four rows away from me. And the next story I'll tell really quickly this was an Amanda Wakely dress that I had worn to death, and it was just gorgeous. Like, had top of your thighs basically, and it was an insert, a chiffon insert, and the whole dress kind of came out like this at the back, and it was just gorgeous. That was also a burnt orange color, and it had been tearing slightly for some time, and I decided about an hour before this particular performance that I should try to do something with sticky tape to like just kind of secure it in place. The concert was just violin and piano. And so I was faffing about with this tape. And I had said to the guy that I was playing the concert with, you know, does this look okay? He was like, I'm really not sure that looks great. We had to go up the stairs to go onto the stage. As I was walking up the stairs, he came up after me. He stood on the back of the chiffon dress, pulled the whole thing down. There was like a hole this big at the back. So we had to then postpone the concert. Like, we were like, I can't go on stage with a hole that big. And I ended up then, it was too late to sew. We couldn't find a sewing kit. I ended up with this like cluster of sticky tape at the back of my dress, walked on stage with it like that. I was playing a piece on my own at the beginning. I became so concentrated that I decided to close my eyes. And I closed, and the piece is like 45 minutes long. And I opened my eyes after maybe 20 minutes, and unbeknown to me, I had been slowly turning round. So by the time I opened my eyes, my back was like halfway to the audience. And I as I opened my eyes, I saw this guy kind of going like this. turning. And I had like literally turned like halfway through to the audience. Anyway, the whole thing was just an absolute disaster. Like, those are just two of the most extreme stories. But as you can imagine, there's been many, many more.
Yeah, I can imagine. Nikki, you've obviously travelled the world with your £2 million Stradivarius, which I imagine is wrapped in maybe the Amanda Wakely dress now to protect it. Do you take something which you would consider to be a comfort blanket with you everywhere?
I need your help in like sorting out my travel situation. I'm very disorganised and like, you know, I see all these people traveling, really, they're like both chic and comfortable, and I can't quite get to that stage. So I don't know, like I have loved not going to airports for the last 4 months.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot tell you how there is not a single part of that, other than maybe the odd nice meal at nice restaurants, at nice airports, there's not a single part of it that I miss. I just end up getting into these, you know, just not good routines of like, I have the same pair of leggings, and like, my only requirement is that I have enough to keep me warm, because as you know, planes get absolutely freezing and I cannot stand that.
So. But there's nothing that you take, even if it's a photograph or a charm or a bracelet or a ring, is there nothing that you can't live without?
No.
Apart from your violin. That's so interesting. Okay, well, I'm going to come, so that's another thing. So it's online shopping and your travel wardrobe, which I've got down to a fine art. Even if I'm going for 2 weeks, I'd take hand luggage, and I've got everything I need. So I will teach you that. And then, my darling, what would be your birthday suit? So let's say you were playing for Her Majesty the Queen or the Pope or someone. What dress would you go to that's hanging in your wardrobe now?
Well, if I hadn't put on weight during lockdown, which I have, I would, so if I was like my previous weight and could get into it, I would probably go with the Suzanne Neville dress it's like the most stunning. It's navy blue with a black sort of belt type thing. And it is just the most, it's just a very simple kind of hourglass type, thick, gorgeous material, sits amazingly. I wouldn't necessarily play the hardest piece in the world in that dress, because you can't breathe 100% normally. Your breath is like a tiny little bit restricted, but it is just the most stunning dress. So yeah.
Lovely. Lovely. And just very quickly, what is the best material to play in? Would it be like a satin or something, or a silk? So something quite lightweight and fluid.
Definitely. I would say silk and satin are both beautiful materials to play in. Any, you want to feel like you're sort of to have a light corset or something is sometimes quite nice, but that the material itself on top of that
is just
absolutely non-restrictive.
Well, Nikki, you're extraordinary, and everything you're doing, you've got your new Elgar album coming out, or is it out already?
It's out already, yes, yeah.
And you love Elgar. I know you love Elgar, and you love the man himself, and felt a real connection with him. But yeah, so, okay, I'm going to help you with clothes, and you can help introduce me properly to classical music. Is that a deal?
Yes. That sounds like the best deal ever. I think I might need to add a little bit more into the deal. But I would say, welcome your help.
Yeah, you're amazing. All right, my love. Well, listen, you take care, and thank you so much for your time, Nikki. And good luck with everything.
Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure. Good luck with the album, and good luck with the proms on, when are the proms? The 3rd of September. Good luck with that too. All right, my love. Take care.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.